If we were to go through the book of Job tonight, you start out in Job chapter 1, you're introduced to a man who has been blessed with a large family and a lot of wealth. Just a very blessed man. The Bible describes him as perfect and upright, a man that fears God and shuns evil. And I don't know of a better description. What a thing to be known of in the community is a man that's he's perfect and upright, and he fears God, he shuns evil. But as the chapter moves along, we find Satan launches an attack in an effort to get him to turn against God. And Job loses all his belongings and all his children as a result. And then in chapter 2, Job loses his health. And as the chapter moves along, Job's three friends come in. They stop in and they visit with him. And they enter into a lengthy discourse to prove to Job that he's the problem. Which is just really strange. If you think about that scenario, everything that Job was experiencing and his friends show up, and I just cringe when I read it. They just launch right into helping him to understand that, Job, you're the problem. And that conversation covers the next 30 chapters, and then a fourth character, Elihu, jumps in, or a fourth friend. And I think Elihu was probably the closest in his observation of what was going on of any of them. And he talks about how, let's not second guess God. And then God seems to pick right up on Elihu's thoughts. It just moves right into Elihu speaking God speaking after Elihu in chapter 38. And he lends his perspective to the conversation. And then at the very end in chapter 42, Job's fortunes are restored. And again, he is a wealthy man. But right in the middle of that whole thing, we find ourselves here in chapter 19. And Job makes this statement, "I am escaped with the skin of my teeth." You know, Job was facing some of the most difficult circumstances known to man. He lost his possessions. I mean, we're talking major setback, major financial setback. He lost everything he had. He lost his loved ones, his family. His children were gone. He lost his health. And his friends came, but they didn't support him. They sat there in the middle of that and told him, "Job, you're the problem." And then he had a wife who didn't support him. Any one of those difficulties by themselves would be difficult, would be hard. Those things are hard. When they happen in our experience, they are hard things of life. And so I guess the question that I have tonight, I don't know what journey God will take me on in life, and I don't know what journey you're on, but life does bring its setbacks and its difficulties and its hardships. And the question is, how do we work through those? How do you process the difficult things of earth life? How do we work through that? I have a neighbor lives across the road from me, and a couple of winters ago, he was having a lot of pain in his back. And they decided the back surgery was the way to fix it. And so the week came when he went in for surgery on his back, and it was early in the week he went in and had surgery, and towards the end of the week I went up to check on him and see how he's doing. It was a winter night, and I went in there, and he was there. He had gotten his grandma's recliner, one of those electric ones that reclines you back by pushing a button, and you get real flat and can tip you way front to help you get out. And he was laying back there, and I said, "Hey, how are you doing?" He said, "It hurts so bad." He said, "After a week, it was supposed to feel better, and it hurts." His one vertebrae was like broken off or misformed in some way, and it was pinching his sciatic nerve that hard that he said it was black and blue when they opened that up in there. Remember, I'm the one that faints when you get into the gory details, so. But they fixed that up, but it became a lot more involved than what they were anticipating going in. And a week into it, he was having a lot of pain. And he said, "Brendan, this time of year, I want to be outside. I want to be out with my boys, and I want to be hunting and trapping, and I don't want to be here in this sofa, and I don't know if I'm ever going to walk again. I don't even know if life's worth living anymore." Were you ever there? And I said, "Listen, I hung garage doors," and I said, "I'd be there in the garage working And they, you know, men would come out and watch me work, and after a while they'd say, yeah, I had back surgery a while back. And I said, I met a lot of men that had back surgery. I don't know why it comes up when you're in their garage working, but none of them stayed on the sofa the rest of their life. They all pulled through and they're all walking again. You have a lot to live for. Press, you know, press on. But Job said things that are pretty similar. Job 10:1, he said, my soul is weary of my life. I will leave my complaint upon myself. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. But Job was up against some really, really, really difficult things. And it was bad. But the question is, how do we process that? Because Job went through it so well. And we know the entire story and we know the end. And so tonight I'd just like to look at some keys. Keys that I can claim in my own life and keys that you can claim in yours, no matter what we face, what difficulties God allows to bring into our journey and into our path, what are some things that we can do to process life and the difficulties of life? And the first one I have, the first key as we face the difficulties of life is a committed trust in a sovereign God. I just think it's foundational to processing these things. I have a friend who I know when he was younger struggled with discouragement in his youth. And I asked him one day, how did you deal with that? Like what helped you to, like what worked for you? And he told me that at the end of the day, you have to come to rest with a sovereign God who is in complete control, who knows what tomorrow holds, and he does all things well. And you just have to decide that you're going to rest in that and be okay with it. I'm sitting that's what worked for me. I just had to decide that that is, first of all, true, and second of all, I'm at rest with that. And we see some of the way that Job's thinking worked. Turn to Job chapter 1 and verse 1. Job 1 and verse 1 describes Job as a man who feared the Lord. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that was man was perfect and upright, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. In verse 5, it says, and it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, this was his children were feasting, that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. A couple things that happened there. First of all, it says Job rose up early. He took the time to get up early and to take care of sacrificing. It was part of his worship. And the other thing it says there is that it was something he did continually. These were patterns that were in Job's life. He rose up and he worshiped and sacrificed, and he did it all the time. This was the way he lived. Job was a wealthy businessman, and yet all the things that he had going on and all the things that he was managing did not interfere with that pattern of getting up early and worshiping and doing it all the time. And tonight, if you haven't faced difficult experiences, that's the time to start putting your roots down. If you haven't run into a lot of difficulty yet tonight, start to put your roots down and start to build patterns like this. I'm told that the man that compiled the Zion's praises never had a morning when he didn't feel like jumping out of bed and praising the Lord. And tonight, if that's you, wonderful. Jump out of bed and praise the Lord. There's nothing wrong with that. The time might come when you'll be tested in that. And it is hard enough to trust God in hard times when we've set those patterns of trusting God in good times. And so the time to start is to start now. Start to trust in God and rest in Him and patterns of trust and worship. Because you can see, in spite of that Job did struggle. Chapter 16 and verse 21, he says, oh, that one might plead for a man with God as a man pleadeth for his neighbor, right? And he just, it's almost like he was wavering. If someone could just plead for me to God. And that was a man who had already had patterns where he worshiped every day and he did it all the time. And yet in the middle of a time when he was in just extreme difficulty, you can see his soul is wrestling with that. The other interesting thing, turn to Job chapter 33. I want to pull out a verse here as we think about God and who he is and resting in him. Elihu is speaking in Job 33 and verse 12. And he said, I'm sorry, I ended up in Psalms. Let me get back in Job. Job 33 and verse 12, he says, "Behold, in this thou art not just." And Elihu was talking to Job. "I will answer thee that God is greater than man. Why dost thou strive against him? For he giveth not account of any of his matters." All right, so Elihu's just saying, God is so much bigger to us. He doesn't answer to us for the things that he brings into our experience. He's not accountable to us for that. And we, so often we want to ask why in the difficult things, right? And I think that's natural. And I think God understands that we want to ask why. And he's even okay with us coming to him with those questions. But at the end of the day, we have to understand God doesn't answer to us. God does not answer to me for what he brings into my experience. And I do believe that Job understood that. Job's strongest testimony, and it's powerful, is in chapter 13 and verse 15, where Job says, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." Incredible testimony. No matter what happens, if he chooses to take my life, I'll choose to trust in God. And so that's the first key tonight. To just learn to trust in a sovereign God who has complete control, that knows what tomorrow holds, and he does all things well, and just be at rest with that. And 2 Corinthians 6, 17 and 18 says, "Wherefore come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." One of the most blessed and amazing things about the God of heaven, who holds tomorrow and has it in his control, is that he says, "I want to be a father to you, and you can be my son. I'll be your dad." And just like my boys, when they're out in the backyard today and their little riding toy gets stuck in the snow and they're looking for dad to help them get bailed out, we can trust in our Heavenly Father to work us through the issues of life. I think it's the first key, and it's so foundational. I will have trust in a sovereign God. The second one, when we get into the difficulties of life, that I find here in this book, is to look into creation, God's creation, and observe his greatness all around us. Turn to chapter 9, and we're going to read the first 10 verses. This is Job himself speaking. Job chapter 9, verse 1. "Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one word. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength, who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered, which removeth the mountains and they know not, which overturneth them in his anger, which shaketh the earth out of her place and the pillars thereof tremble, which commandeth the sun and it riseth not and sealeth up the stars, which alone spreadeth out the heavens and treadeth upon the waves of the sea, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades and the chambers of the south, which doeth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number." And Job just starts to talk about how God displays his greatness in nature around us. Elihu talks of some of the same things. Turn to chapter 37. Chapter 37 and verse 2. "Hear attentively the noise of his voice, and the sound that goeth out of his mouth. He directeth it under the whole heaven, and his lightning under the ends of the earth. After it a voice roareth. He thundereth with the voice of his excellency, and he will not stay them when his voice is heard. God thundereth marvelously with his voice. Great things doeth he which we cannot comprehend. For he saith to the snow, Be thou on the earth. Likewise to the small rain, and to the great rain of his strength. He sealeth up the hand of every man, that all men may know his work. Then the beasts go into dens and remain in their places. Out of the south cometh the whirlwind, and cold out of the north." By the breath of God, frost is given, and the breadth of the waters is straightened. And Elihu just goes over different things. Let's get 11 and 12 yet. Also by watering, he wearieth the thick cloud, he scattereth his bright cloud, and it is turned round about by his counsels, that they may do whatsoever he commandeth them upon the face of the world and the earth. He just talks about the control that God has in nature and the way we can observe that. And you know, we can have a cold winter, but sooner or later it warms up again. That pattern continues. The snow falls out and spring returns. And a day like today should certainly remind us of just the faithfulness of God and the blessing that he bestows on his creation and on all mankind and the incredible power that he has. One of the things that Brother Durbin and I have in common there at Swatara is both of us have had water in our houses from too much rain. And you know what? When it starts to rain, it goes through your mind. I don't know if you ever quite forget, you know, you just watch that creek and you watch the bank a little bit. But you might as well not worry too much, right? Because finally it's going to rain however much God says it should rain. And he'll tell it to stop raining when it should stop raining. And he controls those things. And then God spends several chapters in 38 to 41 quizzing Job on the wonders of nature. And he says, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Can you send lightning? Did you give wings to the peacocks? Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? And he just starts asking Job these questions. And for us, as we, when we get into the difficult things of life and we get right up in working through them and up close, can we still stop and step back and look and observe God and observe him working in nature around us and see his faithfulness and see his strength displayed? And we should be able to. And we ought to be intentional in looking for it. A day like today should remind us of the faithfulness of God. We shouldn't miss it. And you just start to see those flowers come pushing their way. The snow isn't even all melted. And they're coming up out of the ground already. Because it's that time again. And God's faithfulness is on display. And we should find it. Because earth life, again, is going to bring difficulties. And we wade into those. But if we can't see the blessings, and we can't see the inspiration, and we can't find it, we get ourselves into trouble. And God is displaying his faithfulness every day around us in creation. The third key that I have for working through the difficulties and the setbacks of life is that I think it's interesting that Job was committed to righteous living. Turn to Job chapter 31. Job chapter 31 and verse 1. Job says, I have made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I look upon a maid? One of the things that is clear here is that Job took personal holiness seriously, and he took it as a personal responsibility. I have made a covenant with my eyes, right? And I won't look on a maid. And he took it personally. Now, setbacks and discouragements, lack of health, whatever it is, certainly does not indicate a spiritual problem. Not necessarily. It could be something completely unrelated. It would be unscriptural. This story, Job's setbacks weren't because of his spiritual failure, right? But at the same time, when we get into the difficulties of life, there can be temptations in those moments to get into sin. You know, after all, who cares, right? Where's God anyway? That can be one of the problems. But the other problem is, if you're finding yourself in a season of life where you don't have soul rest and you don't find God real, I think we do well to look at this question and have I taken my Christian life seriously and am I committed to living righteously? And we talked about that last night, so I don't think I'm going to spend a lot of time on it. But Job had that level of commitment. I have made a covenant with my eyes. I will live righteously. I will be sure that I do. And here in chapter 31, this was well into the struggles that he had. And he had not forgotten those kind of covenants that were there with him. And he stayed true to those. And we can find rest in God as we walk closely with him and as we walk in Christian victory, in spite of whatever setbacks we have. And so it's just another one of the keys. If we want to find our way through the difficulties to make sure that we are committed, and there's a lot of New Testament verses that we could look at. Well, we looked at Hebrews 12 in the devotional. It's a great example. that I'll just press on. I'll look to Jesus Christ, the author and the finisher, and I'll press on, and I won't grow weary and faint in my mind. And press on. It's a great example. Ephesians chapter 6. You've done all to stand. Stand therefore, and have that kind of commitment in my life. Another key that I find, the fourth one, is that Job focused on blessing others even in his grief. Turn to chapter 16. Chapter 16, verse 4 and 5. Job said, he told his friends, after his friends came in and they railed on him and told him all his problems, and he said in verse 4, 16 verse 4, I also could speak as you do. If your soul were in my soul's stead, I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you. He maybe even felt like it a little bit, right? But in verse 5, he says, but I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips should assuage your grief. And you just look at that. Here was a man who was pressed in life, extreme difficulty, and his friends come in and they don't help him out at all. And he says, I could do the same thing to you if the tables were turned, but I wouldn't. I would lift you up. I'd encourage you with my words. Sometimes in life, that's the best thing we can do, right? Sometimes the best thing we can do is when we're with someone is just to use our words to try to bear them up. We saw that in Hebrews 12 as well. Just lift up the feeble knees and the hands that hang low. And just take the time to do it. It's what should have been happening in this story. And the interesting thing in that is, when I am in the difficult things of life, God doesn't give me a pass on that. Even when I am facing hardship, God still is looking for me to take opportunities to lift up the people around me. And when I do that, that something good happens psychologically when I'm in the middle of a problem, but I stop and help someone else with theirs, and I just lift up their hands a little bit. And there's something beautiful that happens in that. And if you find a person that can do that, you know they're working through difficulties, you know they're facing grief, you know they're working through whatever it is, and yet they're looking for little ways to bless the people around them. It's one of the things that helps us to take the steps through our own setbacks and issues. The fifth one that I have is that Job was a man who admitted when he was wrong, and he admitted his own failures. Turn to Job chapter 42. Job 42 and verses 1 through 6. This was after God came down and God talked and he said, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? And God just displays himself to Job. And then in verse chapter 42, verse 1, that Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do everything and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Here I beseech thee, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. See, Job understood that he had missed it. He hadn't gotten it all right. And so he just repented of it. And we make mistakes. There is not a one of us that doesn't make mistakes. And that's okay. And it is extremely freeing to understand that I make mistakes and that's all right. When I make mistakes, I just have to go back and clear it up. And to be that humble. I know I won't get it all right. And so if there's something that I get wrong, I'll just go back and I'll clear it up. Do you know the freedom versus that thinking that I have everything stacked about right, and I really don't make mistakes, and having to live life making sure that I never do, and how much that controls you. But just to be able to relax and say, you know what, I'm not perfect, and be humble enough to go back and tell people when you make mistakes and clear it up. And Job did that here. I repented. And Job worked through this really well. I have no idea how you would. Well, I guess I'm going over the ideas of how you would work through. Job is an example of how you work through the difficult things of life. And he did so well, and yet he saw, you know what? I was wrong. I talked out of my place. and he repents in dust and ashes. And we just have to be able to be humble enough to do the same. The next one that I have is that Job forgave and was forgiven. And that is in the same chapter, chapter 42, verse 7. And it was so that after the Lord had spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is kindled against thee and against thy two friends. For ye have not spoken to me the thing that is right as my servant Job hath. See, God even says that Job spoke well. Verse 8, therefore, take unto you now 7 bullocks and 7 rams, and go to my servant Job, and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering. And my servant Job will pray for you, and for him will I accept, lest I deal with you after your folly, in that ye have not spoken to me the thing which is right, like my servant Job. So Eliphaz the Temanite, and Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite went and did according as the Lord commanded them. The Lord also accepted Job. Do you see the principle there? When Job, in the middle of that difficulty, well, was getting near the end of the difficulty, and here's his friends who came in, and they were wrong. The way they treated him was wrong. They were wrong in their conclusion. The whole thing was wrong. And God says, you offer a sacrifice for them. And Job obeys God and he does it. And God accepts him. But you know how tempting it is in that moment to take the victim mentality and to say, but they were wrong. And they were wrong. But they mistreated me. I needed their help and they left me down. And to hold that against them. And right there, we start to lose that walk of the relationship that we have with God. But Job offers it, and God accepts Job. It's a beautiful thing. He forgave and he was forgiven. And the New Testament is so clear. Even the Lord's Prayer, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And then there's the parable where the man owed so much. And so the king said, well, throw him into prison and sell everything that he has. And he begged, and he said, all right, I'll forgive you. Just let it go. But then he goes out to his fellow servant. He grabs him and says, give me what you owe me. We just have to let go and release the wrongs of others. And in that, we find God's acceptance of us. And the last one that I have is that Job was a man of unflinching faith in his ultimate destiny. To me, it's the most inspiring part of this story. Turn to chapter 19 and verse 23. Job 19 and verse 23. Remember, we started out in Job 19 and verse 20, where he said, I'm escaped with the skin of my teeth. Job was at a low spot. He was feeling the squeeze right here in chapter 19. And yet he says in verse 23, oh, that my words were now written. Oh, that they were printed in a book, that they were graven with an iron pen and lead in the rock forever. And I don't think Job knew his words were being recorded forever. We're still reading them today. Then in verse 25, he says, for I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. Incredible testimony. And that word Redeemer, I know my Redeemer liveth, has the idea of a vindicator. Not only did Job know that his Redeemer was there and he was going to see him face to face in the flesh, but he believed from the bottom of his heart that when he got there, his Redeemer was going to be his vindicator and was going to be on his side. In the middle of the lowest spot in his life, when he's saying, I'm escaped with the skin of my teeth, he knew that somehow he was going to meet his Redeemer and his Redeemer was going to represent him. Incredible faith and incredible testimony. I just think of Jude 1:24. Now unto him that is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. See, we're going to meet our Redeemer. And he has that ability to present us faultless, and he promises that he will to those who are faithful. But in the meantime, we can face difficulties, and we surely will. Brother Darvin Weaver calls it earth life. That's the term he taught me. We just face earth life. He's facing plenty of it right now.